Hello, everyone. Welcome to our Out of the Woods Threat Hunting podcast. It's our live Discord interactive edition. It's where we really aim to kind of cover burning topics related to threat hunting and security stuff that we like to talk about and people like to know about. Just want to remind people throughout the podcast, we'll be taking comments and questions through our Discord server. So if you want to participate, bring interesting things up, comment on things we say, feel free to write ahead. But you can sign up using the link in the welcome message to get on the Discord server. So with that, let's jump into our interesting artifacts, which is kind of what we dub interesting information or resources that we think might be helpful to the community in general. So, Lee, I think you've got one of the first ones if you want to kick that off.
All right, let's do this. So this is a report from McAfee, and really, it's not so specific on this one that it needs to be brought to attention this specifically. But again, and I don't know how many times I've seen this, is that game hacks, cracked software, and free crypto stuff is being promised to people, which I get it. It's a scam. It works. But it kind of makes you think, like, how much more do we need to do at home? Like, I know we think of October, we think of cybersecurity awareness training and so on. But as a father of kids that have access to tablets and have access to stuff like this, I mean, growing up, it was different. I'll say that. I know. I saw all this stuff. I was like, oh, sweet, let's do this, let's do that. It's free. And I'm sure my dad cleaned up after me and never mentioned anything. But now, like, it's a lot, I think now it's a lot more important to talk to our kids and, nephews, nieces, whatever younger life is around you. Because a lot of these attacks are really targeting kids. They're like, hey, check out this YouTube video for free V-Bucks, or, you name it. And, sure, they're going to put in their favorite game of choice. But then they lead them to a YouTube channel, which leads to a GitHub repo, which they might not understand completely. But what they're doing is they're being better at document, or the attackers, anyways, are better at being or documenting what they have so the kids can easily follow it, which is crazy to me. Which, well, once again, adds to the idea of trying to tell your kids or whoever that it's not always free. It's net nothing's ever free. And I think we could think about like the big sites that collect data on people that have been called out. I'm not gonna throw out any names, but if it's a free app, free software, free service, there's something behind the scenes. And it's really important here too, especially when if you have like a family computer where you are storing passwords, profiles, things like that, important information, financial information. And you really get this across that, hey, listen, if you ever see anything like this, it's probably a scam. It's never, if it's too good to be true, it is. Yes. And, but the fact that they're going at these lengths to be as documented and to be as thorough so that anyone can follow these instructions and compromise themselves is really interesting. And I just like bringing these up. I know it's not very cybersecurity related when you take it home with you, but at the same time, it's showing the vulnerability out there. Now, and I always like to share this as possible because it's just like kind of like the IRS kind of scans. Every tax season they come around, and we're gonna see this time and time again.
So it's funny you brought this up because I don't know if I've told you guys, but you guys might know. So when I was a kid, I was the same boat. I always wanted to like play all sorts of games, and I would find cracks and downloadable things to play these games cracked without CDs or whatever. And I was really good about maintaining all that data that I had. And when I got into cybersecurity, I like went back to my repository to want to play some like older games. I was like, oh, I have this one cracked, and maybe I can do whatever. Realized that one of the cracks actually it kind of popped for something kind of weird, and I'm like, well, that's weird. And when I actually analyzed and looked at it, it was calling back to a dead Russian C2 server. So it actually was probably some sort of remote rat or something that I was using as part of like a cracked game. So I mean, that stuff's existed forever, and it was just kind of funny that yeah, when you don't know any better, children, kids, you brought it up especially, but also, I mean, the newer generations, they're more driven by convenience than probably the older generation, because we've always had to figure things out the hard way. And they're looking for the easy buttons, right? It's kind of like when I went to school, I walked, uphill both ways, right? It's just That's the way it is. That's where our mentality works for us older guys. But so yeah, that's kind of what made me think of that story based on what you had.
I have, Tom, I'll let you share real quick, but I will say, thank God there wasn't ransomware back in our day.
Oh
My God,
my
like, can you imagine? Like, that would be our parents, like, talking, like, with their friends, drinking beers and stuff, like, oh yeah, little Lee ransomwared the family computer again. We lost all our.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because I have a 3.5-year-old, and I've actually recently had this discussion with my wife about, kind of the internet security, because it has to be talked about, right? So we're already talking about the different things about what apps he can access, things like that now, when he, might leverage my iPad or something like that. But full-fledged, as soon as he's old enough to understand, even if it's simple as understanding how to use VirusTotal, I'm like, listen, little man, before you do or go or click anything, you take that link, you drop it here. If it says X, then you can proceed with a little more a little more clearance,
Yeah.
But yeah, no, good points, Lee.
All right. So Lee, if you get nothing else to add, I'll move on to my I guess add there. So this isn't I usually try to find tools that are useful or data sets and things like that that we like to use within threat hunting or cybersecurity. But it's funny because I feel like this is a glaring problem with a lot of people in cyber, and that is kind of time management, right? I feel like myself and others always get pulled in multiple directions as things come up, as things, hit the news, as, your daily tasks, all the different tasks that if they all perfectly fall on the right days, it's not a big deal. When they all fall on one, it kind of becomes cumbersome. So I was looking for like productivity type things. And so this Focus To Do, now granted it is, hosted by a Chinese domain, right? So, take that for what it's worth. But the idea was, is it does the Pomodoros, I think is what they call them, where you can create tasks in 25-minute intervals. So it helps time your focus, because we're all pretty good at focusing for 25 minutes. If we, that's our main goal, not finishing tasks, but just focusing for that long, and it has built-in breaks. So I've been trying to take that kind of philosophy into some of the things I get thrown into, where now, granted, I am very generic with what I create because I know I'm sharing information about what I do on a day-to-day. So it could be, I almost kind of have code base for how I make my tasks. But, it really does help to say, all right, look, I've got these things and I think it's going to take about this long. I'm not going to worry about finishing the task, but I'm going to put 25 solid minutes uninterrupted, right, into this task. And I think it might help. So, I'm curious if other people have the similar issues with just all the things that get thrown at them sometimes, and if they have other solutions they use. But I saw this, I thought about kind of poking around and playing with it. It might not be my final solution, but it was something that I thought was pretty simple to kind of use, and at least got me down the way of thinking about how I work a little better. So yeah, I don't know if you guys looked at it and or what you guys even see or do. Curiosity.
So
I
anyway.
I
Oh,
Oh, go ahead, Lee. All you, sir.
So looking at and yeah, I agree, maybe don't straight away download it and put a bunch of sensitive information. But I think what you mentioned was what I thought about it was just it made you think about how you're working. Like, how much time do I actually focus on a project while I try not to bounce around to different tabs? Because I know we're I know you, Paul, you always have a bunch of tabs open, right? So it's like, oh, where was this? Where was this? Popping around all the other places. It definitely made me stop and think about, like, wow, okay, the next task that I'm going to try and accomplish, why don't I just set, maybe start baby steps, like 10 minutes, just focusing on that alone, seeing what you can get without any distractions. I mean, don't worry, it'd be perfect. But I think realistically, the real world is, people reaching out and, disrupting that. But I mean, it's a nice way to think about, am I being more efficient and how am I really focusing? So
So,
to be cognizant of that.
I'll be honest, and what was funny to me is it made me pay attention to how long I actually focused on something before I got distracted. And so I'd be looking at the timer, I'd be like drilling on something, and I'd be like, all right. And then I kind of hit that natural pause where I'm like catching my breath and trying to think of what I want to work on next. And then I'd get distracted, and then I'd be like, oh, I'm supposed to be focusing. I look and it'd be like 10-minute intervals. Like I could focus on something for 10 minutes, before my attention's usually grabbed, and I was like, oh, I should really be better at this, right? So that part was interesting, just kind of trying to play with it a little bit. But what do you got, Tom?
No, I think this we play in a place where data is so helpful, especially in our line of work. Also, I can't help but notice the idea of this and like looking at it, not this app specifically, but the idea of what this can do, and just think of all, the fellow neurospicy folks out there that this is, we're optimal in all these different kinds of ways, and tools like this can help us. I remember using in a previous role, I remember leveraging some of the stuff that Microsoft was trying to roll out. If I remember correctly, it was called like Insights, I believe. But basically, it had that integration where it could show like the way you were spending your time and where it was going. And I find that stuff very helpful to kind of optimize my workflow into different things. I think even going deeper is like having something like this where you can kind of see where your time's spent. It can help you optimize your workflow to your like prime like hours or prime moments, where if you have a project that has higher concentration requirements, you can know the windows by seeing this kind of data that you put together from tasking yourself in this way. You can see where, hey, I have this project that's higher priority. I should put it in this window because I know I'm going to be able to give that high focus in those specific areas. So tools like this, I think I'd love to see them a little more accessible. I'm sure there's stuff out there. I know I've poked around with a few, especially on mobile. Usually there's a lot of managing it, which tends to throw me off. I'd love to see something where I could, almost set and forget, almost integrate with the different things it
So,
does. Kind of like what I was seeing with Microsoft.
you mentioned the managing piece. One of my solutions for that, because I knew I was going to have the same problem, was my very first task every day for that 25-minute focus was setting up the day, right? So like, and then I was like, why don't I do this every time anyways? Because I usually just grab the first thing I think about and start working on it. But that actually taking that pause actually made my day run better too. I mean, it's just dumb things that once you get so ingrained in habits and to-dos, yeah.
It's good to have data points to help course correct your own personal
I'll listen to
operational.
data. I won't listen to people's opinions, right?
They're looking at the Pomodoro technique that who was it? Genome Pops mentioned. I like it. I think we should set our work around this. But it says set a time for 25 minutes, and then when it ends, take a break. And it says repeat steps 1 to 3, 3 more times.
They need
So
that 15-minute break.
was that 75 minutes of work? And justify it? And then is that longer break just you're done for the day? I
No,
was
it's 5 minutes. It's 5 minutes after every 25, and then 15 after your fourth one, right? But like, what's nice is it does make you disconnect, so that I think you can be more effective. But yeah, it's built into the to-do thing I had as well. But it's just interesting because I've never heard about it.
Sorry, Harp6X mentioned ticktick.com, which I'm checking out as well.
Yeah, I looked at that for a brief second. That looks actually a lot better. So I'd probably promote that, just like he was saying. So I thought that was a good share, for sure.
All right. Sorry
Cool.
about that.
Yeah.
Oh, you're good. I appreciate the crowd sharing some of those resources. I want to look at Google's too now.
I know. I wish like I had this conversation before I picked this, because I was like, I kind of already like what I'm seeing. So, Tom, what do you got?
So oldie but goodie. Some might be aware of this, some might not, but I felt it was relative, especially to our topic of the month here. So this is a little tool set from MITRE. They created a CTI templates. So pretty simple, pretty straightforward. There's a GitHub repo out there, and this project basically aimed to help deliver templates for different kinds of reports, whether it be threat actors like IR, treatment analysis, looking at specific campaigns, or building executive reports. I know in previous experiences, the reports that you need to deliver to certain areas tend to vary. So I don't know how many people are thinking about this, but I thought these templates were really good. I know of peers and such that have used them to help launch their programs a little bit to be able to deliver high value reports or deliverables for different things, especially when it's based around CTI or any of your IR stuff. So it's really simple, nothing crazy, just a lot of report templates, but they were built out of a project from MITRE, and I thought it was worth sharing and talking about, especially when we're considering either maturing your process or starting your process out, or maybe just looking to refresh it a little bit. Maybe there's some ideas there that can help you kind of refresh how you're doing your deliverables. But yeah, it's really simple, short and sweet. What do you guys think?
Yeah, so my first thought is something I've learned, and I've always had to present threat-based or operational-based from cybersecurity perspective to leadership and other non-technical teams and things like that. And the information you share is just as important as the format you share it in, because one of the things that is makes it easier to talk to the same crowd or to convey the same message when you have those interactions. Is if you have the same kind of format, it makes it easier for the audience to digest it because they've seen that at least before. So the first conversation might be getting adjusted, but as you do routine things, I think stuff like this is if you don't use this exactly, but having something like this in place is very important from just that being able to share information because it makes you better at actually figuring out what information you should be sharing as far as like make sure you're plugging in the right things, but also on the other end, depending on who you're sharing it with. What to do with it or what they should focus on and understand. I think that is a huge win. So yeah, I love things like this.
Yeah, anything that can save you time to say, this is what your report should look like. Because I can't, I mean, I don't know how many people we talk to about reporting. Like, yeah, we got internal, reports. We got our own thing. Then we, they're constantly fine-tuning at what parts did they like, what parts didn't they like. I mean, Myers, and serious question here, what product has come out or solution has come out of Miter that has been bad? I don't know. I maybe I haven't been in the game long enough. Maybe they did have a couple flops, but I've seen nothing bad from them. So the fact that MITRE is sitting here saying, here, these are the things that all these industry experts say you should include and people need to know. I mean, I feel like that's an easy win, and that takes out
It's
so
super
much
resourceful.
time. Like, you don't have to worry about report. All you have to do is, like you said, plug in the right things. That's awesome.
Yeah, free resources from a well-thought of organization, a very, very quality organization. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. All right, so that kind of closes out where we talk about interesting artifacts. One quick thing, I know we're really bad at doing introductions, but before we jump into the next topic, right? I'm so used to like just having these conversations, right? But do a quick introduction for those that may be new to this or and kind of curious what our background is a little bit before we jump into the next topic. So maybe our perspectives will make a little more sense. But I'm Scott Poley. I work at Intel 471 as a senior threat hunter, and I've managed teams, I've built operations, I've worked as analyst work, I've done all the technical and intel kind of functions to some degree. So I'm kind of just pulling on all those strings when I build my opinions and comments or whatever. So, but yeah, definitely if you are more curious about exactly what I've done, hit me up on LinkedIn and connect me there because we can have ongoing conversations as well. I love talking to people. So that's me. I don't know who wants to take the reins on the next introduction, but go ahead.
I want Tom to go.
Tom Castera. I've been in the field now for a little over a decade. That's pretty similar to Scott. Helped build out operations. Spent a lot of time in the SOC life. Love threat hunting. Love the side of like detection engineering and things of that nature. Just really love this sector. The security sector is fantastic. Same deal. I won't kind of go into all the details, but we love to talk shop. So I think I could speak for the group here. Please, if you ever want to reach out, just talk shop. Ask questions or, maybe course correct some things we say because we're certainly never perfect, but we just love this stuff and love to talk about it. So, go ahead, Lee.
I don't know how either of you left out like the main link here. So I probably have the least amount of time in cybersecurity here. But I've been the longest, or I was longer or at Cyborg and Intel longer than either of these. Ironically, Poli was my first SOC boss. Castura was the level two when I was a level one, who rapidly or Castura rapidly grew out, became a SIEM engineer. Whenever the idea for how do we make these detections better, he kind of led that charge and pulled me along. Poli pulled me along because he got me my first job in cybersecurity. But it where we worked, it was like this big open bay, and you just talked and talked and discussed things. And it was great, like bringing these two or getting these two here to bring their ideas that originated there was just amazing. So we've all worked together. Polly was my boss, and we just love this stuff. Very passionate.
Yeah, cool. All right, so the big topic we're really jumping into here, and what this live edition is really going to be about, is really how to operationalize intel for threat hunting. And we're going to kind of take the approach on what, as threat hunters, we think about threat intel and our experiences with threat intel in general. So we kind of will define that a little bit and what we like to see when it comes to threat intel, and then how that kind of gets pulled into threat hunting and from that perspective. So if I insult any threat intel analyst, I am not a threat intel analyst that follows a specific training as far as how you're supposed to do threat intel. But based on my experience on using it, that's the perspective. So it's probably not going to be the full story of threat intel, but it's going to be the parts that we care about here. So I hope that helps if case kind of rubs you in the wrong way. But so that's why we're going to kind of focus more on like the first part is like the intel purpose or value, right? That we see it bringing in general. So Tom, I think you've got kind of the first kind of question or topic or whatever you want to say.
All right, let's get it going. So, obviously to both of you guys, but whoever would take the lead, I think Scott, I think you wanted to go first on this one. What value do we expect cyber intel to bring to an organization?
Yeah, so all the ways I've seen intel actually have the biggest impact is one, it kind of creates purpose, right? As far as why are we doing cybersecurity in general, there's that proposition. But out of that also, it creates priorities because one of the hardest things when you think about cybersecurity as a problem is where do we start? Like there's so many problems that kind of fall under that umbrella. How do we manage this? Where do we start? And then I think when you have threat intel that is built effectively, they also can help build approaches and cater to solutions as well. They might not be doing the legwork, but they provide the right resources so the solutions are better. And if there's a problem, getting off the ground is easier to attack or approach that. And so I really feel like, threat intel should really have a seat at the table when it comes to being aware of the changes that are going on in the environment, impacting decisions. Because one of the things, and I even made a comment later earlier today on LinkedIn, someone was talking about like cybersecurity budget and things. A lot of people get, when they get hit with attacks, it's not because they don't have the latest and greatest technology. It's sometimes just how their infrastructure is set up or how their processes are enabled. And so I feel like when there are big projects, like you're going with a new solution, you're trying to offer something new, it's good for threat intel folks to really know those things because they might have some use cases where someone's using similar technology and they got hit by something and this is how it got hit. So you can accommodate those types of weaknesses or those types of designs into those. But if threat intel is just a hey, we sit on the outside and we just constantly feed things in and they don't get those kind of requirements or pulled in those discussions, I feel like it's less effective. But that's the kind of the value I see bringing into an organization. I don't know what you guys have for that.
Oh yeah, I'll chime in. No, I mean, I think the expected value, it's always going to vary, but I think there's really no dodging intel if you have a security anything, right? Like it's innate and part of the whole process, and it's just whether you apply specific focuses or efforts around it. But whether you think you're using CTI or not, you are. So if you're just watching the news, if you're seeing something new inside, you're using it. So the value is absolute if you have anything resembling a security organization inside of your company, big or small. What do you think, Lee?
So I feel like if you have an established CTI program, and I'm going to relate to like security and threat hunting as well, it should really drive the security efforts. They know the threat landscape, right? Their job is to look at threats that are to the company that you're in, look, see who could be wanting to harm them, attack, and so on, based on industry, based on geolocation, geopolitical stuff, you name it. But that, if you stand up a threat hunting team or even a security operations center, and you're like, yeah, we're just going to put generic alerts and detections, that's going to capture your generic attacks. But if there is someone significant enough that wants to target you, whether they be unhappy with your service or hacktivism or just don't like who you are, Or, you know, say like political stuff from the boards or CEOs or whatever, if they make statements they don't agree with, if they want to target you, then they're not going to use the generic attacks. So that's where CTI really shines, is keeping people up to date about who, you know, what that threat looks like. And if they extend into the actual, you know, underground and like start picking pieces apart, and then they can figure out what their actors or bad guys are doing. But and then feed all that information to your security teams to bolster that, to better prepare them, set up detection, set up alerts, go for threat hunting for certain things, and so on. That's where I feel intel brings in, because, like I said, you could stand up threat hunting or security operations center, and then you'd be alerting your environment, setting up, you know, tailoring things like that. But from the outside in, you kind of have a limited view.
So, you know, kind of flipping on its head, can, you know, threat intel teams or functions have value even if they're not directly applied?
Yeah, I think 100%. I think it's hard to come off the yes box here. A lot of it has to do with the idea that maybe it doesn't apply overwhelmingly to your org. So to use a very loose analogy, let's say you're in the financial sector and you get some intel that's referencing something from the energy sector as a really loose example.
Yeah.
You might disregard it because it's not directly impacting something you're there, and it might not necessarily be like vendor specific to where it applies either. However, knowing the trends and knowing the way things are shaking and shifting, because if you really are watching the intel, you can kind of see these directional shifts that
See
happen.
patterns. Yeah.
Yes, and it gets you kind of ready to know what you might face. You might see something that you might want to up your focus on or prioritize more to put in some efforts, whether it's, you know, a security application or policy across your org, or all the way down the into your SOC. You want to build detections, or maybe you want to add specific types of intel into your ingestion stream to help enhance those things that are outside of your general scope. So I think that it has value. Not every report has value, but CTI has value always. So even if it isn't directly applied to you. And plus, I think the other thing too, a small tiny note, is having your ears to the ground on some of that. And going back to that example with the financial sector versus energy sector, it would help for you, for anybody that's ingesting that, to be able to be ready to have those conversations. Because a lot of times people will see, and I've experienced this many, many times in the past, where somebody will see that might sit in a higher up seat, might be at a C level, might be just a manager, or somebody that's concerned will come to you and see this report that came out that has nothing to do with your environment, wouldn't touch your environment. You know that you're working deep in it, but you should be ready to have those conversations to help drive that and feel, make people feel kind of like engaged with you, and you're on the same team
Feel
and
that
you're already
conversation.
aware, control the conversation, right? So yeah, just
The
my two cents.
question, does it bring value if the intel that they ingest isn't applied, or if the intel program isn't applied?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of times, so when I was looking at the problem, like if you start up a new threat intel shop, right, you're going to be worried about collecting things and just starting to analyze things, but you might not have anything to deliver necessarily, but you're learning things, right? I feel like that's an okay day one problem, but I feel like if you're like 3 or 4 years into your shop, I feel like you should have now something you can directly apply. Otherwise, you might be doing things wrong to some applications. It's kind of how I look at it. And the reason why I bring that up is because a good example for me, when we were doing the Cyber Shield exercises, I remember they were trying to train intel analysts to be kind of cyber intel analysts, but they were trained to do intel but not cyber. So the cyber thing was kind of new to them. And what was interesting was over the years, while they're trying to integrate and train these folks to be effective, you can see where the first exercise they integrated them, they didn't offer a lot of value. It was like, I know it was a fake scenario, but they'd be like, oh, we just heard on with the dark web or on whatever source that, you know, these bad actors are interested. It's like, that's cool. Well, we already know it's going to be a red team, blue team exercise. Like, that didn't really add value to what we're going to do operationally. And then they kind of got better where they would say, hey, this one enclave, they're sharing that they got hit, and here's the IOCs they're using. That's cool, but we also know the IOCs are going to be very different from enclave to enclave because it's exercise and they're supposed to be different, right? So it was like you're sharing kind of the right things, But then what was really interesting is when they started sharing, like, hey, looks like this long enclave was hit and they took over the web server on the edge, and that was their foothold. And then from there, they were able to gain access. So now the information was like, okay, we have somewhere to focus. And then we were able to drive in and say, looks like they're hitting us the same way here because we see activity now to go investigate. So it was like, it was really interesting to see how it matured. But you can see this similar day one problem where they're like, we know bad things are out there. I don't know if you saw the news. And it became more of a news versus a here's some things to consider.
Okay, because I was a little confused. I was thinking, like, if I get it, if you're collecting intel and you're sharing it and talking about things, that's great. But the value comes with application. And this might be way off the mark for some people, but I feel like if you are collecting and sharing, and that's as far as it goes, maybe you're just showing that you're prepared and that you know some stuff, but at the same time, I mean, knowledge is only so strong until it's applied, right? Like, think about universities. Think about the things you learn in school. Like, it's great to have that information. It's great to be able to answer a question. But at the same time, if you're not doing anything with that, I feel like it wouldn't bring value.
Right.
Well, that's my train of thought. I might have been misunderstanding the question, but yeah, that's where I stand.
Oh, I think the competing thoughts exist there, right? So it's nice to have kind of those
Yeah.
perspectives because I think they do exist. I think we've all three of us have experienced them on both sides of that coin, right?
Yeah.
All right, so moving along a little bit, how should an organization approach its cyber intel driven operations? Like how should they think about, whether it's spinning it up or maturing it or enhancing it? What are you guys thinking?
So, yeah, this is when I was kind of going back to like, your day one problem. You might not have a great focus. You're just trying to figure out how to digest and collect and come up with those deliverables. But, one of the things, especially if Intel 471, that we have our GIRs, like our intelligence requirements, like that's something we try to map things to. And I think that's kind of a good thing for an organization to kind of have as a deliverable to the Intel folks. Like, what are the requirements and what are the things we care about? But what that really kind of defines is some cyber intel folks, they focus on cyber, right? I know a lot of young people in the career, it's like, I need to learn everything cyber. So that's like the focus. But you got to kind of figure out how to slice that up because you got to know enough about yourself to be able to know how to apply it. So knowing the vertical you live in, also, what are some adjacent or related sectors to your sector? Maybe you're in water, w waste and water management, or you're an internet service provider. But you kind of fall under critical infrastructure, right? So then knowing critical infrastructure is where you fall makes your net a little bigger and understanding of what threats may care about that and stuff like that. So that's kind of always important. Geopolitical relations also important to note. Like if you know what's going on in the world, then you kind of know what, who's got stakes in what, that could be helpful. And then I feel like it's good to understand and identify threat categories, as far as what kind of threats do you, and not necessarily like who, but like, do we care about ransomware operators or not? Do we care about nation states or not? Like understanding those higher level categories and then start to try to identify past threats or known threats and then collect that, relevant information that way. And then, you always got to kind of be aware of those opportunistic attacks. That's kind of like how you deal with the noise and you look at it that way versus looking at it as like a real threat, because that's something when you talked about earlier, leadership comes to you because they see something in the news. You got to be able to frame it as like, yeah, this is just an attack that's going on, and where they can gain success, they will, but they're not targeting us. It's just one of those things, and we pay attention to those things, right? So, when it comes to all that stuff, so that's kind of how I look at how an organization should really approach the cyber intel folks with those requirements, and from those requirements, they should be able to provide the inverse of what I described.
I have no words. I mean, I was gonna say, like, I don't think there's anything you missed, because if there are no requirements or if there's no idea of the threats out there, then why are you bringing threat intel into your organization? Or, well, I can understand, because even if you do, I mean, it's like, once again, bringing another tool into your environment that you're not sure how to work or what value it brings.
Right. No, and I do think the JR's cupcake. I like the whole face-to-face conversation. I think face-to-face conversations are really good to help drive into the requirements, but I also feel like eventually getting something on paper so that if someone says something different, like, well, we didn't, this isn't helpful. Like, this is what you kind of asked for, right? So you kind of have to, I think, in writing, have some defensible stuff too, because I've seen where conversations have flipped on me. So,
I mean,
but good point though.
I just like that
And
handle. If that handle does stand for general information or intel requirement, that's funny.
I think the kind of an approach an org should take with their operations from Intel is open-minded. I know that's hard to do, but I also think that it doesn't necessarily have to be the higher ups in the org to decide this is valuable. I think there is always, I think cyber threat intelligence is one of those areas that you can show relative value and ROI pretty quickly from the ground floor. I fully believe that. I've experienced that. I think an obvious approach with that, though, just from experience and things in the past, never approach it when you get a good piece of intel and start screaming to the ceiling that the sky is falling. That's not going to get you very far.
Yeah. Fear is not a great motivator long term.
No, but you can show the impact, you can show the value, you can show the return on the time spent of leveraging reports. You can show all these things pretty easy. So from the top side, I think asking your folks that are on the ground how they're applying that would be a good start, even if you don't have a full-fledged operations there, and keeping an open mind to what is brought to the table. And then from the ground floor, stay curious, keep driving that, ask questions, show how this applies to X.
Should be
Leverage the
organic.
intel to change. Yeah, and it really can be. It really can be.
So, well, go ahead. Go ahead,
I
Luke.
just I think there might be one thing that, and maybe Tom was alluding to it, but follow up is big.
Stay engaged. Yeah.
Think about acquisitions, mergers. Have you shifted focus in your organization? Have are there new threats out there? And sorry if I'm rehashing what you said, Tom. But that's kind of what I got out of it was don't just stand it up and leave it. Make it a living process.
So, Leah, I was going to bring up a point, but I think we kind of already covered it. So I don't know if you want to jump to your next point.
Sure. How does cyber intel contribute to proactive versus reactive security measures? I think we've coming from SOX and now being here, I think we have a good idea of what this would be. But still, want to see, from all the years that we've learned from, I kind of want to hear what your take is nowadays.
Yeah, I think cyber threat intelligence, I'm gonna stand on my little soapbox here. I think leveraging CTI is absolute for you to try to leverage or get to a place of proactive. It's fundamentally absolute, if not built
Yeah.
from. So when we talk about proactive, there's a lot of things that that can come with the different variables, right? It's like it sometimes it gets buzzword a little bit. But when I think CTI in a proactive way, I think what can it do to help me position myself for what's coming? How can I identify trends? How can I identify gaps in coverage, gaps in my environment, things we're not considering? How can I see what the landscape's looking like from different threat actors, nation state sponsored actors, all the way down to what are the script kiddies coming alive, figuring things out, leveraging AI, anything. I think it'll never get you all the way to proactive, but it's absolutely fundamental to go to proactive. So you need that stuff to be able to get yourself ready. So if you see a report, it doesn't necessarily have to affect you, but you can absolutely take value out of it by positioning yourself, by asking a question. Maybe X vendor was, has some third party compromise and you don't have that vendor, but you can identify through all the research and the intelligence that's coming out the types of techniques and behaviors that are leveraged, and you can consider those and positioning yourself there to see if, okay, if maybe the shift is away from that vendor, because we see all the time, and anyone that's reading threat intelligence all the time, the bad guys tend to reuse some of the same behaviors. That's why we tend to harp on that.
Threat hunt.
Yeah, somebody somewhere is going to throw a single file executable at you. It's just going to happen. It doesn't matter if it was only for this attack, it will come. So if you are leveraging that in that way and thinking about it that way, you're getting yourself so much closer to proactive. And it's in my mind, it's almost seamless. Like if you integrate the idea or just the thought processes right, it's seamless. It really just catapults you towards that level.
Yeah, so this is kind of how I look at it too. I think if Intel is doing the right things, then the stuff will naturally start to become proactive. But I really feel like the security operation, if threat intel is kind of an arm or a fee for that, the more reactive threat intel is, the more reactive everything else becomes. So I feel like they're the biggest driver of that culture of that proactive. And so the visual I kind of put in my head is if all your threat intel is like a stack of papers and you're only grabbing from the top every time you grab something to do threat intel work, you're just a reactive shop, right? Because there might be stuff in that stack that you really need to be looking through and find what are some trends, what are some patterns, what are some things that are relatable in that stack of papers. And those are the types of reports that you should be building upon and kind of care and feeding to other parts of the organization, especially operations, right? Because that stack's going to continue to grow and you're just going to be dealing with the latest thing that hits. Not saying you ignore emerging things, but you get a lot more value if you're able to like dig into that stack at different points. So that's kind of my perspective is if you want to have a proactive shop, look at how threat intel is handling information.
And what actionable items they're bringing to the table.
Yeah.
If they're only bringing IOCs,
It's all reactive.
that's not proactive. Let me, before we move on to the next question, let me actually tweak this. Can you become proactive without using threat intel? Truly proactive. I know this isn't in the script. So,
I
yeah,
can't. I
man, like,
cannot see how. I can't see a way
yeah,
forward with that.
because even if you don't have a dedicated team, you're gonna have to do research, and any research being done, I would put under that, you're doing a threat intel function, right?
What if you're only running unstructured hunts?
Oh, so you're kind of like doing the needle in the haystack, or you're doing like rarity type stuff? Yeah, so you might find things, but when you find them, you won't know what they are. So then your research is on the back end. I feel like I don't know what this is. What's going on? If now you have to be like, is this bad or not? Then you start pulling in, well, have I seen this before? Has anyone else seen this before? I mean, so I feel like it just kind of feeds a different life cycle, but one that can be scary because there's more, I think you're more prone to miss things. Like you might find some really cool things, but I think from like a success rate, I think you might have a hard time.
Yeah, but even countering that, even with the loosest idea, you're getting it from somewhere, right? Wouldn't that in even the loosest senses be classified as intelligence or CTI in some layer, maybe not full-fledged, but if you're like, hey, I want to look for this thing because I read or I know it's bad because X, you're kind of leveraging that, right? Either tree generation.
Ones are just like almost like user-based analysis. Like, what are my
Oh,
AR and
okay.
doing? What are my finance people doing? Let's
Maybe you
people
cracked
shift
it open.
other shift list off their environment, right? I think that's a valid thing, right? If you're creating your own intelligence because you have something that you're able to build, I mean, you're still kind of building your own reporting, so it's a function, but yeah, it's a different. I mean, of course, you have to like make us think about the problem differently, but yeah, it's a good point because you kind of flip it on its head. There are different ways to do threat intelligence, but I feel like it's harder to make that. It's proactive work, but I don't think it's proactive as far as dealing with threats. Maybe I'm wrong.
It could be the equivalent to flying blind.
I mean, yeah, fair point there.
So I
Jim,
just
if
think that.
you
Go
here's
ahead.
the thing, you'll celebrate your wins as if you did really good work, but you'll never know when you fail, right? So you always look like a winner in that perspective. You just might not win that often. Versus the other way, you at least have something to say. Well, we failed this many times, but at least we know what work we put into it and what we covered down on. So
So threat hunting took
or
the yay. Only unstructured hunts bring you only wins.
if you want to come out as
Great.
the
Whoa.
wizard from the pile. Holy unstructured win. Great job, Lee.
Special effects. All right, let's move on. So, yeah, Tom, I think you got the next script. Oh, wait, Lee, you have it.
Back at me?
Yeah.
Do we really want to come back at me?
Just studying the fireworks on my left.
Unstructured questions. No, shit.
All right. So if you had to categorize intel reports or info into types, what would they be and why?
So, yeah, I like to make things simple when I think of these things, right? And it's kind of like the report structure that Tom, you shared earlier with like the framework that MITRE reports there. But I kind of like to think of you have the strategy and awareness type of reporting, right? And that's the kind of stuff where you're able to communicate to high level that you kind of know what's going on. You kind of know what's trending potentially. And you might have some things of like, these are the things we may care about in the future or should be caring about now. And then the other category I would kind of put reporting into is like your near vertical or active desk things. And what I mean by that is, hey, we have things that are close to home or could be close to home. So we actually are going to put a resource on it, kind of like watching the needle closely on these things, but they're not necessarily immediate concerns. And then the research / ops relevant is what I call like the third category. And that kind of gets summed up with, these are the things we're trying to solve and create solutions for because we either have gaps as far as how we operate in certain areas. There's specific attacks happening within our sector that are directly relevant. So it's really a way to say close to ops, close to home, and strategy. It's kind of like where I kind of break those up, if that makes sense. Well, how did you guys think about it?
Yeah. I like all those ideas. I don't think that there's, I think you need to apply categories no matter what. I feel like if you don't, you're getting yourself into a big pool. I think there's a lot of ways to go about this. For me, I'm going to go off a couple of different experience points just to toss this onto the fire. Depending on what your ingestion rate is or kind of like the level of the amount of reports or the different variety of types of intel you're ingesting, the value that you get from them should be categorized in like a living, breathing way. So what I mean by that is, let's say you have intel source A, intel source B, and source C, and you get 30 reports for each. You kind of like, this is, goes to a level of maturity, but if you can find a way to assess the validity of their reports and their value of their reports, you can use that as part of your ingestion structure to better leverage the intel in a more seamless fashion. So that's one way that I think categorizing them works. Because I think the validity of reports really helps you. Some reports are highly technical and you can plug and play different things into something like detection engineering. Other reports talk about the problem, but they don't really give you anything actionable. But at the same time, there are some reports that live and breathe in that way that just help you be able to have the conversation with maybe an executive or something like that. So I think putting those kind of categories around it, like immediately relevant to operations, relevant for, you know, discussion, and then validity categories. So like these ones rank higher than others just based on the value of the intel or the quality of the intel. Those are just a couple of top of mind for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'd answer, but I am deep in these thoughts. Good questions from Eccentric Ethical. I might be saying that wrong. Eccentric. But they're basically asking, how do you do Windows-based threat hunting? If a new process is getting created, where are the indicators? How to identify if a task has been created by an attacker, legitimate user, or system? How do we identify malicious registry changes? So just to catch everyone up, I posted the ultimatewindowssecurity.com, which is a resource that we've mentioned many times. I mentioned in almost every presentation I do in my trainings that I give. It is a great resource to look at the Windows security log events that are that exist natively. If a new process is being created, what are the indicators for identifying a malicious process? Riptide hit a really good point. Just say looking at different DLLs and executables in common malware locations, temp folders, app data, users, public directory, program data, Windows, you know, things that normally when you install something, if it's legitimate, it normally goes like program files or program files x86. But if it's running out of like a downloads folder, like someone downloaded from Chrome, you know, that could be or that could be suspicious. If you look at the parent process being like Outlook or another Microsoft Office thing, that could be suspicious. And I'll get back real quick. As far as registry modifications changes go, you could look at the process that created the registry modification, which could be suspicious. Like if it's not reg.exe, regedit, or I think or regedit or something that is legitimate or coming from a System32 directory, that's suspicious. If it is referencing something in the registry key, that looks suspicious as well. So like referencing a bat file or another script file or an executable or DLL that's in one of those locations that Riptide mentioned, that could get suspicious as well. So instead of just looking at the event itself, you gotta look at the context, look at all the information in there, what spawned what's referencing what, and so on. But hit me up on the side and I can go deeper into that conversation. So I apologize for we'll get back to the conversation at hand.
We're good. We're good. We're here to engage with the community. That's why we're doing it live, right?
Well, yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, just to sprinkle back onto the top of your snow cone there. Getting familiar, just your top question, eccentric ethical is the how to do Windows-based threat hunting. Get familiar with Windows logs. That's core to the whole thing. There's so much information in them in so many different ways, and you start kind of speaking the language as you get familiar with what they are, and then those other questions start finding a way to answer themselves. It's a very high level answer. I just wanted to throw that back on top.
Sysmon.
Shit, Sysmon. All right.
Definitely.
So, moving back into the topic, how should organizations balance strategic intel, so big picture stuff, with tactical intel, so more specific threats? And why do the audiences matter?
Yeah, so, this is something that I've always seen a lot of operations run into, where because your stakeholders of management and higher ups are like the justification and your support for even being there sometimes, that if a question comes out, it's like kind of drop everything, answer these questions, find information, do whatever it takes. But I also feel like if the intel has to jump every time an exec reads a news article, then it's a really unbalanced operation to begin with. I think it's based on how you do reporting and the content in your reporting. What you're really focused on is we know about threats, and what we do is show that it's managed, right? Because we know about it and because we know what the risks are, we can basically communicate that we're managing the threats because we know about them in this way. So that's something, but also like a cadence in which you actually have those conversations. So something that I've always liked is, some people have like too strong of a cadence. So it ends up being more of like big picture and strategic threat hunting than it is, or not threat hunting, intel driven stuff versus the tactical side, because they're constantly catering to, we need to put out a weekly or a monthly thing, and they're gathering all this information and put out that report. And I think what's really good is when big things hit the news or items that you think might be important, build a framework of a report, put some details in there, and don't polish it. Just have it so that you can do a quarterly type or an annual type report, and then you can pull on those resources to build it. And then if management comes to you and says, hey, what do we know about this? This is really important. People are asking questions. You at least have the work mostly done, that you just add some polish if you need to pull an ad hoc report out, but don't make that the always go to, because the cadence thing. Also, IOC collection, as good as it is not tactical. It's historical, right? I understand that you could be impacted at the same time, but you're still dealing with things where the attacks already occurred. So I don't look at those as a tactical measure. It's good to have. They're great for tools and use in tools. Usually a pretty easy lift, but don't stop there if you think that's being tactical with threat intelligence. And yeah, so and tactical is something that always should be ongoing, right? That's where I think a lot more work should be spent than the strategic, because it's, I think, what moves the needle the furthest. Because explaining to executives what's important and maybe can help with some budget decisions for moving the needle, but it doesn't move the needle every day. So you might move the needle big once every couple months, but moving the needle consistently is, I think, a better mark of success. So I don't know, my take.
I got nothing again. I mean,
Okay.
you don't want to throw too. I mean, what I think of, you don't want to throw too much technical jargon at a higher up that might not understand what's going on. They might have more questions that are not related, or they might get
A
not
different
confused.
frame for the audience. Yeah.
Right. Like you don't want to be like, we saw this attack chain, blah blah blah, and then and if the question is, well, what does that mean for us? Then you were too technical. Now, on the flip side of things, if you're working with technical people and you're just talking big picture, you know, whatever intel you're focusing on, it's got to be applicable to the group that you're talking to.
Yeah, I think the something in this question that is interesting to me is that I think that the perfect sweet spot to be is merging both of them together, and that can play to all the audiences. So what I mean by that is your big picture and tactical pieces, you really want to meet in the center there because they affect each other. So as an example, let's say you have an executive that comes down to your operations and they come to you, screaming, the sky's falling. They read this report, or they seen something on the news, or they got a Forbes article. That's actually happened to me before, where everything got shook on its head, because of this one thing, and it stood the operations folks on their exit pan, and they're like being centered to panic because there's panic up here. And then in the inverse of that, I've seen where analysts see something and they don't fully understand how it applies to an environment, and they're leveraging this kind of real specific threat that doesn't necessarily apply, and they're screaming, the sky is falling, and they feel like they're not being heard. So
Yeah.
there's this merge point where you want to get to be able to have these discussions in a place where they both come together. So it might be really scary threat. It might not have the impact you think, or it might look like a really small threat, but it might have a huge impact. I know it sounds like I'm talking on both sides of my mouth, but there is a fantastic art to being able to have those conversations, to something Lee alluded to. So the audiences really matter, because you can't come from a technical spot and go sit in a room with a board of directors and start showing them log data and talking about the behaviors in depth. They're not going to really grasp what you're trying to
They might not
tell them.
even care at that
They
point,
might
yeah.
not even care, right? They might be looking at a different perspective, bottom line, et cetera. So there's a merge point, I think, with those two things. They really, you got to kind of find a way, optimally to get them together in your orgs.
Well, so when we talk about how we have those conversations and something always gets brought up, what is your take on the whole MITRE attack and how that applies to everything?
Lee, if you wanna go ahead, I always have plenty to say here, so I can let you start this one, my guy.
You just want to talk at the same time and we'll see who's righter.
Please do, please.
So, I love the Meyer attack matrix. Like maybe you or I alluded to it earlier, but Meyer puts out very good solution products, resources. I will say the one thing that, and it's not even on them, but the one misconception that I think I see about the MITRE attack matrix is that it can be used to convey a message of coverage, effective coverage. And I guess I'll be the doom and gloom guy. Tom, I'll let you talk about the good stuff around it. But so, you got the grid, you got the matrix, you got all these behaviors, tactics, techniques, and sub-techniques about what adversaries have done in the past. But from what people also like to do is they like to get their grid and highlight, make a dashboard, highlight where their hunts are, and say, look, we covered this behavior in execution. We covered this behavior in persistence. My question and my challenge to everyone out there that's listening is to not be persuaded by that, to say, yes, we are fully covered. Because if you say that we have, I'm going to just use registry run startup locations as an example. It's commonly used, putting an executable in the Windows run current or current version run registry key, or dropping an executable or a script in the startup folder in Windows. There's a million ways they can do that. There's a bunch of different
ways that people don't think about. They find new ones. Yeah.
Right. You could just say we're looking at the registry key, right? Is that really like a detection? Because legitimate stuff lands there too. You might have stuff that you want to start on log on and once you start the computer. But at the same time, so it's not always malicious. There could be legitimate stuff there. So knowing your environment, and once again, there's a million ways to do it. So don't be persuaded that once you have that box colored in, that you're good to go. Always be looking for the next way, looking for different ways to improve that detection. If it is a detection, if it's a hunt, constantly improve it. But I'll let you go, Tom.
No, I will admit to having fell in those holes before. Well, I have a huge
school. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm a huge honk. I love the MITRE ATT&CK framework. I like defense. I like what MITRE does. I like the stuff they put out. I think it's high quality.
Yeah, yeah.
But you have to put it in perspective where it really, like you said, it depends on your organization, because your organization and what matters to it is what's going to drive how you leverage tools. And the people you have within is going to decide how you leverage these tools. It's not absolute. But I do like the ideas of leveraging like the MITRE ATT&CK framework for things like things I've tried to do in the past with like detection engineering, where you can kind of look to see if, you know, those colored boxes aren't absolute, but it could give you good data to say, well, crap, we haven't done, or we don't have anything that's kind of touching on any of the stuff that MITRE does in lateral movement. So maybe it's like, oh, we're doing all this work here, and maybe we're not seeing some of the areas in the attack chain or in the attack matrix that just aren't being thought about or covered. And maybe that gives you the signal to put a little more effort in that or reprioritize some efforts, but it's not absolute and it shouldn't be absolute. So I got to a place with MITRE, the last time I was trying to operationalize it in a SOC where I wanted to leverage it in that light, but I didn't want to use it to report upwards because I didn't want it to become something that was absolute to all the points you made, Lee. Leverage it to kind of see where you're at, understand what you might have in certain areas or what you're covering down on, and help you prioritize. But don't flash, hey, we've done X and we have this much of the grid covered, because that's going to lead you to failure. That's going to lead you to a false sense of security, false sense of confidence. Anyone that's got their sleeves rolled up and is in this environment, this stuff changes way too fast to get that comfortable and confident about any one setup there. But the tool itself, the resources from MITRE, they're fantastic. They really are, and I'll stand by them for as long as I am. But it's not absolute, not at all. What do you think, Scott?
So, I think from an Intel perspective, MITRE ATT&CK is kind of terrible, and for one reason, because I don't know how many times I see reporting where Intel analysts will hide behind MITRE to map things and not discuss what's going on, right? So when I find reports where they map techniques without talking about the techniques and making references to the techniques in the report, it's so disheartening, because the mapping is such a great tool, but the mapping is to help us categorize, understand, consume, right? But not a way to describe, like Lee was alluding to, when you mentioned the technique where it's like, oh, we've got this covered. Not understanding what is actually covering from all the different perspectives of that being covered, like you kind of miss the boat a lot of the ways. So I think how it's being leveraged sometimes I don't like. But on the flip side of that, I also feel like it has enabled a lot of reporting from like a classified side of things, where you can't talk about those techniques, but you can talk about the MITRE associated tagging to say, we know these things or this actor or group has done, you know, these types of behaviors, we just can't disclose them. So now you at least have an idea of how to think about the threat, which I think is hugely valuable. But I think people don't realize that sometimes when reports come out that only have MITRE techniques, it's because of a classification or release information problem, and not how you should be writing reports in general that are of most use. So I love it, but I also hate when sometimes it's used more than the actual context itself. That makes sense.
You know who does this really well? CISA.
Oh, the hiding. Yeah, so that was
something the Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agency, and
because they deal with classified data. I feel like that's why we see it. And that was the example I thought in my head, like why I see it the most there is because they can't share a lot of what they have, but they need to share something.
actually, I was going to say on the other end, their
Oh,
public
really?
reports that are coming out are actually very well documented. It's and it's been a it's definitely a change because
Action.
I remember
Yeah.
reading your old reports and being like, there's nothing really actionable here. Like, okay, great. But now what I've been seeing is as they go through the report, they'll in brackets put the technique, as they're describing the attack. And then once you go down to the table, you'll see like okay, the MITRE tactics. Here's initial access, and it'll say the name or say the ID, and then it will tell you from the report what artifacts fit the bill. And I thought that was a really good effort, or I guess improvement from their past
Change,
report.
yeah, absolutely.
So.
But it's good, like they should find a similar issue, right? Potentially, right? Like if they mature to that next thing, then they're seeing the value and seeing how things potentially should be done, which is good.
Small pet peeve. I'd love to see more intel reports that, you know how you get a lot of reports where they'll reference the MITRE tactics and techniques in the bottom, but they don't reference what actually applies to there and they kind of put the onus on the reader. I know it's a really stupid thing, but it's a little pet peeve I've grown into the more I've read it. It's like you've done all this work of going through this stuff, like classifying those in more of an ingestible way would be so helpful, you know?
So,
Because sometimes they don't even apply, and it's like, why is this here? I don't see where it applies at all. Like, what are we talking
right. Have you
about?
seen the reports where they usually have like the table? And what I really like is they have the table that has like the MITRE technique, the descriptive name for it, and then they have the example from the report that ties.
Yes,
When they
yes,
play out
yes,
that way, that is
yes.
like gold, right? Like,
That's
I'm like,
gold, man.
cool. Because now, like, I understand I probably won't use just what they put as the example, but at least know where to look now in their reporting to say, okay, how do I tie this together and how do I make an effective hunt from this? That becomes, hugely impactful.
So I just put a link in for, and this is an older one, but it's Joint Cybersecurity Advisory from FBI, CISA, some other agencies, but Stop Ransomware, Black Vasta. If you go, it's the PDF, but if you go through and you just scroll through real quick, you can see what we're talking about. Because yes, when you see a report that says, "Hey, we saw command.exe in PowerShell," then be like, "Execution." Like, okay, what did
Yeah.
they do? Like,
Right.
you want me to hunt for PowerShell and command.exe in my environment? Like,
Fun.
what do you even give me?
Yeah. So, I mean, Tom, I think what we're talking about kind of leads into what you're gonna bring up next.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of jump into what the best characteristics for threat hunting in regards to CTI. So from a threat hunting perspective, what is your, and I've already put a little coin on a guess of what you're going to say, and I'm hoping I win this, my own personal bet, Scott. But tossing it to you, from a threat hunting perspective, what is your golden standard or preferred report?
So it probably aligns with this, but I think I know what you're gonna say. So I'm gonna assume you're gonna say like DFIR was the example. So I knew that's what you were thinking, but really it came down to breach reports. And it's not because breach reports are the most important reports. It's just for whatever reason, when those get released, whoever writes them always feels obligated to like, well, we can put everything out there because this is so long ago and it's already happened, and we're not just it's. Basically, so in the past, they include everything and they make this really long report. But those I love because a lot of times, and this comes from experience, right? And actually, Lee, you can chime in on this too. Like, how many times we read the same really long report and we pull completely different things out of it?
Oh,
Meaning,
it every time because
right.
I know I'm looking for persistence. I love
Yeah.
persistence. You
But
cannot.
my point there is the more information that's in a report like that. And based on your team and their skill sets, there is so much like since there's so much context there, there's so much to build off of across the team than a single individual because of the perspective, skill sets, and everything, and the way they digest those things. And sometimes you catch really weird, nuanced things, and like we'll bring it up to each other, like, oh man, I didn't even think about that, right? Like it's just so those types of things. But basically, I like basically, I want to know the how and the why all rolled into one, right? Like the why is important because if I can understand what the intended target is, or the ultimate goal, then I can apply that to my environment better, or apply that to maybe something that is tangential to the actual technique. Like maybe like they use this, but if they were in my environment, I know they can't use this, but it's so close to something else I know about, so I can like hunt for that specifically. And then obviously the how, I mean, screenshots, lines of code. The one thing I really hate is, and I call them, we kind of touched on it, but malware menus or MITRE menus. So when I talked about the list of MITRE tags with no context, I call that the MITRE menu, right? Cool. You give me a whole list of everything that, you know, they potentially are associated with, but I don't know what to do with it other than potentially make these very non-specific hypothesis about how I'm going to deal with the problem. Or the malware menus. I love analysis of malware where they can say, well, this malware can steal this and it can sit and do this, and it does. But if you talk about the capabilities of a malware, but don't talk about how it's present or seen on a system, or how it interacts with a system beyond just its capabilities, you're just giving me a menu of things to be worried about. So you're really solely focused on the risk, but not on the solution. And threat hunters, we want to be part of the solution. So if you just give me the risk like components, you make my job really hard, because now I really got to create a lot more stuff to even feel comfortable that I'm covering down the right things. So I don't know if that answered everything and was what you were thinking, Tom, but yeah.
No, I mean, I'm a big fan of the DFIR reports, just for a specific reason. I've always loved the structure. I've always loved the comprehensiveness of it. I like the value that you can pull out of it. And I like how the stuff that they're talking about tends to find its way all the way to the summary pieces, right? So like, here's all this really highly technical detail in a lot of cases, and here's how you put these things in the order of ingesting them. And I've just always found great value on those. If I had my choice, and this is just my own personal preference from my experience, I'd love to see reports follow a similar pattern. But there's a lot of good reports out there. I don't want to say that there's not, that that's the only one, but
Yeah.
that's one that I really put,
That's
I
the
put it
only one
both
we're
on that
talking
one.
about.
You
Like,
want to, if
wait.
I have one gold star to give out, that's where it's going.
It's just, I always use that as a reference for people that are especially new to the industry, because it gives them a taste of everything. Because sometimes you don't know what you're missing if you don't know it exists. And at least people can say, oh, there's all these things that you can learn, and all these things that you can discover. It's a great place. So if you get a report that's not as fulfilling as that, you at least know how to fill those gaps yourself, because you know they, you know, those resources exist. So, yeah.
I'm gonna add something else while we're riding this DFIR report wave that we got going on. They have added labs that you can buy or that you can gain access to.
Oh, yeah.
If it's like doing try hack me or hack the bots, and you like getting into those machines. What they've done, which is I think is even better, or is another value add, is they've created or they've taken the reports that they have, and I apologize, DFIR report, if I'm not explaining this properly or if I'm off. If so, please feel free to reach out to me and correct me. But they've taken the reports that they have and created like a lab simulation where the logs are there and you can hunt through them, which, and first of all, they're affordable, which is nice because it gives you that experience that seasoned threat hunters have, right? You can start messing around with the data, start pivoting and looking through. You can access the reports so you know what's malicious and what's not. But it's great because they're there for the community. It's kind of like what we try to do with our workshops. We're trying to spread the knowledge around of here's what you do, here's the tools, here's the logs, here's what it looks like, kind of deal that if you don't have that, or if you don't have access to that in your environment or access to an environment like that, that's just improving your skills and your professional growth exponentially.
Hands-on goes a long way. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm done with that.
So Lee, what do you got for us for the next talking point?
Oh. So this one, I think we might have just touched on a little bit, but we're going to dive deeper. How does timeliness of threat intel affect its usability in threat hunting?
So for me, I don't, timeliness doesn't matter that much. Like I know there's something that is like really impactful and definitely relevant, I think it matters. But I hate just having a single report to work from. I really like having multiple reports that kind of talk about the same problem or the same technique or the same behavior, so I can see like different uses potentially or different flavors of the same thing. Because then it validates what I'm building, but it also makes sure I'm not missing anything. Because sometimes like how people space things out or what special characters they use in theirs versus someone else uses, but they're doing the same exact technique. It's good to see that. So timeliness for me isn't hugely groundbreaking. Really historical relevance to current trends. Like if I can find something historical and tie it to something current, that I think says a lot to me. And that's what I typically look for, right? Is that kind of trending on a lot of behaviors.
Yeah, I think it is a mix. I'm not going to fully agree with you here, though. I think timeliness really does have an impact. And I'm going to narrow that into, there's the variables that we've talked about. But when you're talking about what we had mentioned before, where it comes to like big picture and kind of the strategic approach to it, I think something timely is going to, if you're trying to operationalize intel, if you're trying to make it go to play as fast as possible, the timeliness really does matter. So if you're there, not to short you, Scott, there is absolute
No, I think there's a
value in
place for
having that
both. I think
stuff.
you're right.
But I tend to lean more towards I want it as timely as possible, but I want it accurate and I want the depth. So it's kind of like you have to balance those out. But if I'm facing a critical threat or I'm trying to protect a critical asset, I want to know how to do that as fast as I can.
Well, I feel like the middle of the road there is like build something in a timely manner because you've got good intel coming in, but don't let that threat hunt just sit because it's built. Like reevaluate, right? And add to that threat hunt, like, mature it, which I think would be kind of what you're driving to, right? Like you want to be able to build on a timely manner to be handling the latest and greatest, but you still got a lot of work to do. It's not just a one and done.
Yeah, and when we're trying to apply it to threat hunting, you have a little more of a freedom or more slack to be able to take those things and kind of and massage them a little bit better in your environment. But what if, there's this 0 day that is going to critically hurt your environment,
Yeah,
but
you
you
gotta be
have
ready for it.
very little around it. You want to be able to get in there, and it might not just be from a position where you get intel and you want to position yourself. You want to, isolate certain environments or, maybe look at what your impact is and restrict things. But maybe you do want to start hunting to see if it's impacting your environment. I can tell you from personal experience, we've ran into that problem before where it's like, hey, there's this thing that's making everybody think the sky is falling and we're trying to hunt to find it, but we have very little intel on what is actually going on. We just know these things are affected. So then you get into this blind spray of trying to get there. So I'd love to see more detail as timely as I possibly can for those like on fire incidents. When I can be more tactical, yeah, give me the depth, right? The timeliness kind of goes away down that line.
I completely agree. I was going to sit there and talk about it depends on how focused it is to you, right? If there's an attack going on an energy sector and you are in an energy company, you want that as quick as possible. If it's general updated tactics of ransomware or cybercrime, do you really need to know that? I mean, yeah, the faster the better, but if it's more in depth and gives you more actionable items, I feel like that would be the that'd be like the value add of the context behind it as well.
I'm just getting old. That's what I heard. Just slowing down.
Slowing down. You've learned the
Cool.
patience. Well, you haven't learned the patience yet.
So I was going to take the next talking point, but I think we kind of answered it. And based on
Yep.
timely, I don't know if you want to jump to your next one.
Okay, so how can organizations measure the effectiveness of a threat intel in improving hunting success rates? That's ironically a question, or that question was answered on a customer conversation the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and
Yeah.
it was really unique, but I'll let you two answer.
Yeah, I mean, like I've always kind of spoken to this a lot of times, and I kind of pitched the same thing. One, there's the easy mark, right? Like how many threat hunts do you get net new generated? But sometimes that gets hard because, especially as we've seen, once you create a good library of threat hunts that cover down on a majority of the most popular behaviors, it gets much harder to create net new necessarily. You kind of create very targeted things at that point, not very broad things. But one of the things I think is always really effective in measuring and showing is as you're digesting threat intel, how are you mapping that to threat hunts that you already have? Because if you spend, let's just use reports as an example, even though that's not exactly what I'm talking about. But if you say you had, 27 reports come in the first quarter and they tied to a threat hunt you already had built as far as a behavior that covers down on those 27 reports, you're basically validating the value of that threat hunt, but also showing the effectiveness of that coverage, especially if those 27 reports are talking about different malwares, different threat actors, different whatever. You're basically identified a very popular technique that's currently being used that you now have coverage for. And I think that says a lot to the value and this and the success that threat intel adds and drives for threat hunting specifically. But I'll kind of leave it at that because that's just kind of how I frame it, because that coverage value proposition is huge.
Yeah, kind of adding into that more, slightly into the weeds a little more. There's one thing that I think can be a pretty strong ROI you can grab out of the collaboration between the two efforts or two teams if your organization is running both teams. You can gauge in threat intel fed hunts. So the more of the structured kind of hunts versus the unstructured, more in that light. You can gauge the time to completion, time to value finds by, was it fed by intel or was it not? So it's a good way to kind of like measure statistically how that is affecting your programs and how they're feeding off of each other, right? Just one point that I think is value. And it I think personally it's a pretty easy stat to grab, and I think it speaks loads of how the interaction between those
Yeah, you
teams
just got to
is
have that
working.
built in. If you have it built into your process, it's easy to measure.
Yep. You want to chime on this one, Lee? You want me to go ahead and jump ahead?
No, I mean, garbage in, garbage out, right? Like if it's crap intel, it's not gonna improve your processes or your queries that you got going on or detections. If it's excellent, then you can absolutely point to it, right? And say these pieces of intel fed this effort, that effort. And you could see that flow. But if it's just, hey, here's, or if going back to those reports of the minor references that don't reference anything, right? What are you gonna do, right?
And I know every environment's different. This is something just as a loose idea on the fly here, just thinking about this. It would be really cool. You'd have to get to some level of maturity there. But let's say you have a CTI team or a CTI individual who's focused primarily there, and you have a hunt team or a hunt individual that's focused there, and they're the intel person is feeding the hunt person intel. It'd be cool to have that, like it goes through that net, and then you see how that intel person go ahead and applies, hey, these are some of the key points of why this could be valuable in our environment. Not necessarily going out and doing the hunt, but say, we have these things. These are part of our environment. These have some level of priority over X because of our environment or our sector or things like that. Like apply that knowledge of your environment and your sector into that intelligence you're handing off instead of just saying, necessarily, like I found this good report and you hand it to the hunter, and then the hunter's like, okay, I got to go figure out what to do with it. But you can kind of like, you know what I mean? You know what I'm getting at?
Well, like you're driving into the point I was going to bring up next. It was like, how does threat hunt feed back into threat intel? And I think that's the purpose of that, right? Because if I'm hunting for things and I see common behaviors in our environment, or I see things going on in general, or I learn things about our environment because I'm touching our environment, like threat intel doesn't touch the environment much. Threat hunting should be touching the environment everywhere because they're actively looking at data. That's the feedback in, so the threat intel has better requirements, a better understanding of what they're defending. I think that's the cyclical approach there. So that's how I look at that piece of it from my perspective.
Yeah, that feedback loop is important. And again, it's one of those things that like it should be relatively easy to kind of put that together. It shouldn't take a lot of really heavy thought or overwhelming
Just need
lift
open
to.
communication to really start that off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a couple little stat points that you can easily, like, categorize for things that feed that loop that can show back into the effectiveness of how that's all working. And it seems like almost every hunt could feed back to the intelligence, at least at a minimum, to your environment, right?
So I think it could help them understand the criticality of things. Think about that 0 day, right? If they're like, hey, this is a really scary 0 day. Here, threat hunters, go look for it. And here's some indicators or things you could hunt for. And the threat hunters come back and say, listen, like this was great, but none of software or hardware exists in our environment. They can be like, oh, well, okay. So let's look at the make and model. Okay, we know we don't have these things stashed under. Not important or not applicable, and then move on to the next report. So like if they produce a report and you're like, hey, this is really good value. We created X amount of hunts for it. Here's the hunts that we created. Here's the artifacts we were looking for. Maybe they can start thinking about, okay, well, that's how the hunt team is thinking. How can we communicate better to the hunt team with our next intel report? So the next one they push out, maybe they extract those artifacts for you already. Maybe they're like, here's like what a query could look like. Maybe they're not building in Splunk or CrowdStrike or whatever, but maybe they're just saying key processes to look for, command line arguments and so on, so that you break that silo, you build that bridge, and then you start. Bounty Hunter says ours is one in the same. So I'm sure you work very well with each other.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like there's a communication gap there. Like if you can talk to each other and see how each other see what's valuable to each team, then bring those to the table, then that alone is going to start the process of improving already.
Yeah, I agree. So we're kind of coming up on time. I wanted to make mention though. So Lee, I'll give you a minute to talk about it. But February 12th, from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Lee will be hosting another workshop, Hunting for Initial Access Level 2. And we're starting this level two, or he's starting, I'm not going to take credit. He's starting this level two series because they did a level one last year. And now we're kind of revisiting some of the same MITRE verticals at a level two perspective as far as maybe depth dive. I don't know, Lee, if you want to make a quick comment there before we have to close out.
Yeah, so level one was pretty cut and dry, right? We gave you the VM, you got the tools, you got the logs, and all the attacks or all the logs in there were malicious. You could basically, everywhere you looked, it was bad stuff because we weren't trying to make it hard. We were trying to just introduce the idea of threat hunting, introduce the idea of starting with the Hunter platform, taking home package, and how you could run the investigation. Now, what we're doing is we're introducing a bunch of logs that are there to create noise and disguise the legitimate or the malicious, suspicious activity. So it's gonna be, we'll get that for you, the crown one. We'll get you that link. But it's gonna be fun. The whole idea is to go back, look at the level ones, and see how we can grow, how we can make it not impossible, but valuable to you to increase your skills. It's gonna be fun.
Cool. Yeah. So with that, I really want to thank everyone for joining. Once again, we really love talking shop with friends and colleagues. The more you guys had some really good points and definitely added to the conversation. I really appreciate that. If you like what you hear, check us out on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just about anywhere else you guys check out podcasts. Just so you know, if this is your first time, we do a 30 to 45 minute weekly segment that kind of touches on like some top things and from a technical standpoint, how we'd address those reports. From threat hunting or concepts, how we think about problems. So check that out. Usually drops every Wednesday if we release one for the week. But with that, once again, thank everyone for joining and happy hunting.
Happy hunting, everyone.
Take care, everyone.